All right, we've got a great episode of Side Retired coming at you guys today. It is Dylan and Matt, as always, and we're very specially joined today by Gary Sheffield Jr. again. Always love having repeat podcast guests on the show. So, Matt, let's hit the intro music and get right into this. Hello and welcome to this edition of Side Retired. It is Dylan and Matt as always. And Matt, before we introduce our guest, how you doing?
Doing pretty well. Just got off spring break, so ready to hit the back nine of the semester and ready to watch some real baseball. We got like less than 2 weeks now, or yeah, less than 2 weeks. So really ready to see my Mets beat up on the Brewers opening day and have a good season.
Well, that's being a very optimistic Mets fan, but a team that we're sure is probably going to have a better season than the New York Mets is the New York Yankees. And of course, Gary Sheffield Jr. back on the podcast with us today, talking all things Yankees. Gary, thanks so much for joining us.
Of course, I'm sure by the time this episode airs, some more Yankees will be dropping like Mr. Potato Head the way it's going. I mean, DJ LeMahieu's already hurt. Gerrit Cole obviously already hurt. Blake Snell just signed in San Francisco. So yeah, we're off to a slow start, but I won't get too picky because I mean, I'm before a couple Mets fans, so I get it.
Absolutely. Well, there is one thing we want to talk about. Is obviously unplanned. 20 minutes before we hopped on the show, we got, I believe John Heyman broke the story. Blake Snell's a San Francisco Giant. I assume he was on your wish list. He probably would have fit a need for the team. And now he's not out there anymore. So the floor is yours, since I'm not sure if you've had any other else to react to this since the news dropped.
No, I had, this is the first place I've reacted. I didn't even, to be honest with you, I didn't even have a reaction for Twitter yet. I was really just thinking about it. And realistically, I wanted Blake Snell, but not now. I mean, he skipped spring training. And anytime a guy wins a Cy Young, I mean, you just want to get him in camp and get him ready to go. So we saw it last year with Carlos Rodon. Rodon was hurt towards the end of spring training. He was completely off schedule and he just never recovered. He was awful all year. And I don't just think he's just a bad pitcher, because I think he'll bounce back this year. But it kind of goes to show you the importance of not being able to pitch properly in spring training and get yourself revved up. So once I saw Blake Snell taking this negotiation, and it's really his agent, Scott Boras, taking this negotiation all the way to the end of spring training, I was like, why would I give 30-some million dollars a year, which, you know, to somebody who's not even going to get prepared? That just doesn't make sense to me. So I would say right now I'm not that disappointed about Blake Snell going to San Francisco, but I mean, it does hurt because we are short a starter, and then plus with Gerrit Cole. So, I mean, we just got to figure out what we're doing.
Yeah, you were just talking about starters. Obviously, Gerrit Cole goes down. Nestor Cortes is on the bump opening day. You know, I guess, how does it make you feel knowing that you have a guy like Nestor Cortes who's next?
Well,
you know, that's got to be a good feeling. You know, not that your ace is down. Nestor's a good option.
He is a good option. I mean, that's all we can put it. But I mean, at the same time, he's a really good complementary piece. And you saw him. I mean, he pitched an All-Star game just a few years back. So he's that type of guy. But at the same time, he's an asset given the position that he was in. But of course, I don't like him towing the rubber as our ace. I mean, that's just not great. You guys saw what happened with, I don't know if you guys saw with Marcus Stroman, because he didn't want to go off his schedule and he didn't want to pitch opening day. Okay. Well, I mean, a lot of these guys aren't aces. Marcus Stroman's not an ace. Nestor Cortes isn't an ace. He's a really good two. Carlos Rodon, when he's at his best, he probably make an argument that he's an ace, but he hasn't pitched that way in over a year. So there's not really anybody in the rotation that I know for certain what we're getting. So I'm not comfortable at all. And it could really go one of two ways. And for two Mets fans, I know you guys know all about that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's Rodon, obviously, good outing. I think by the time we're recording this, or by the time you're listening to this, it was a day or so ago. But Rodon looked good in spring. But again, you can always say, who knows what happens with spring training statistics. It's all back to square one on opening day. Stroman, I love the whole ground ball argument and that he should pitch well at Yankee Stadium. He seems like he's ready for New York. Now, there's a weird situation where he's like, I don't want to go off my regimen. I really just want to pitch the home opener in the stadium. And Clark Schmidt's a good back-end guy, and it seems like Warren won the fifth spot, although Luis Gil's looking pretty good as well so far this spring, so we'll see what happens there. But state of the union of the pitching staff is interesting. big cloud is Gerrit Cole, because I think the big argument has been two pitchers in baseball are consistent. That's Zach Wheeler and that's Gerrit Cole, and Gerrit Cole is now not there. Just thoughts on how this is going, and now that Snell's gone, is there anyone even in free agency to go consider?
Well, in my opinion, it's going to be the trade market. We just don't know how it's going to shake out. I mean, I was already looking at Milwaukee. Maybe we go reinforce the bullpen, but now he's hurt, right? Yeah. So there's just a whole bunch of moving parts, and the Yankees have to get aggressive, whether it's now or it's at the deadline. I don't know when that perfect time will be. I always thought Corbin Burns was the perfect guy for New York. He's more of a workhorse. He had more reliable innings. And the Yankees, in terms of who they brought in, I didn't always feel like it was a matter of they didn't bring in enough talent. I felt like they didn't bring guys in who were reliable enough at what they do. And it was just too much inconsistency. And when you're in the New York market and we're reading into everything, sometimes it's good to go get a guy who just punches out 200 guys and throws 175 innings a year. Like, sometimes that high price guy is high price for a reason. Corbin Burns is going to be a 200 and some million dollar pitcher for a reason. And that's why I wanted him. So yeah, I'm not exactly sure what the answer is. And that's the hard part, because everyone's just sitting there waiting around looking at podcasters like, who, like, if you say a name, that guy has to pitch well this upcoming year, or like, you're a bozo. You don't know what you're talking about. So it's really hard, especially with pitchers. So I just tend to say, bringing in a guy who's been what you need for the past 5 years in a row probably is the move. So now that we can't do that, who is that guy? I mean, we're just going to see how the year unfolds, because if the Yankees are in the mix around the deadline, and there's going to be somebody out there with an asset that the Yankees can use. And so you just kind of hope you get to that point.
And then somebody maybe not in the trade market, but is actually pitching against an MLB team for the first time in, I guess, a couple of years now, is Trevor Bauer. Are there any thoughts that maybe he could be with the Yankees, maybe that he could be with another team this year, in your opinion? Or do you think that, you know, it's yet another year in which Trevor Bauer is just not welcomed with open arms by any ball club?
Well, I mean, that's the hard part, is I wouldn't even say it's the ball clubs that aren't going to welcome him. It's that half of the fan base is going to look at it one way and always has, and the other half is just not going to care, because confirmation bias is real, whether people want to admit it or not, on both sides of this coin. And I've always said that when situations come forward, especially 2 years ago when this happened to Trevor Bauer, that we always need to give people their due diligence and give people an opportunity to defend themselves. So that was the hard part, of course, is just seeing people be accused, because I mean, when you see people lose their job, and obviously he went and pitched in Japan, didn't pitch great, but he was pretty good. And it's like, obviously he's coming back. He has really good stuff and can help a ball club. To see people like Domingo Germán and Aroldis Chapman, who were literally firing weapons. And it's like, I'm not sitting here clamoring about they should be on or off the field. Like, I'm not in politics. I'm not anything. I'm a baseball podcaster. I like watching baseball. That's what I enjoy to do. But when I see players like that who have those type of short-term history, and then they're on the field and no one seems to have an issue with it, maybe they have an issue for like a weekend and then they forget about it and they go back to rooting for it and talking about his sweating and being able to close a game against Houston, how are you going to, a year later, say that suddenly Trevor Bauer, you're just too good of a person to allow him on the field? How does that happen? And people really don't have an answer for that. They just tend to get in their corners on social media and argue with people who all agree with them instead of having discussions about what's actually happening. So of course, you know, based on what happened in court, he's a free man and there's have been no charges against him, right? So now that he is a free man and is pitching the way he's pitching, I feel that based on how he's pitching, if he pitches well, especially against the Yankees, and he pitches well against other teams, he should be on a field. If he doesn't pitch well, he shouldn't be pitching. And that's how I feel about everybody. I feel that way about Marcus Stroman this year. I feel that way about Nestor Cortez this year. Anyone who doesn't pitch well, I don't want them on the field. And so if Trevor Bauer pitches well, he should see a roster spot. And I just, whether that's with the Yankees, I don't really care who it's with. It should be with someone.
Absolutely. And obviously one of the moves that the Yankees have made since we last had you on the show that I think 99% of fans have fully agreed that this is an awesome move is Juan Soto. And acquiring one of the top five players in baseball, coming to the Evil Empire, I think that was the move that all of a sudden said, Hal's back. Here are the Yankees getting the big guy. Maybe the extension's coming soon. What's been the optimism around the franchise? Because I know Matt's already thinking that he's ours in a year. But thoughts on him being a New York Yankee for now?
Well, I mean, I'll address the elephant in the room about the Mets. Juan Soto's not going to the Mets. Never going to happen. And this is the only reason I say that. I promise you this is the only reason. Juan Soto is going to the Mets the same way that Shohei Ohtani was going to the Mets. I promise you a year and a half ago, there is not one person, and this is fans, this is myself, this is my Uncle Dwight Gooden. I mean, we literally have had these discussions behind closed doors, and it's like, yeah, Steve Cohen is going to go scorched earth and get this guy. There's just nobody that can stop him from going there. But what people tend to forget is that so much of what a player can control determines where they end up going. Yes, people usually go where they're getting paid, but it's kind of like Aaron Judge. We saw Aaron Judge and the Giants, they pushed him to the brink. Like, everyone thought the Giants were getting Aaron Judge. And long behold, everyone kind of said, yeah, I think you need to just not write off the Yankees and the fact that that reunion can happen. And right now, the fact that Juan Soto went through the door as a Yankee, that's the reason why, to be clear, why I don't think he's going to become a Met. If he had hit free agency on his own in San Diego, I believe he would have been a Met. I do. But once you get him through into the Bronx, it's a different conversation because now he's a returning player. Now he knows what it's going to be like playing for the Yankees. And Juan Soto, if you look at his profile, he looks like a little kid who is drafted by the New York Yankees, like getting to wear the jersey. He loves it here, which is awesome because anyone and Mets fans and any baseball fan can attest for this. Anytime you see a player that loves the organization for whatever reason, it just makes you want that to be a long-term relationship. And in my opinion, based on what I'm seeing, and he's still got to perform, it's going to be a marriage in New York. And that's with the Yankees. And that doesn't mean I'm rooting against any of these other teams that potentially could be in those sweepstakes. I just feel like Juan Soto and his personality is just like perfect for the Yankees.
Yeah, I mean, talk about, I'm thinking back to, you know, the glorious 2015 Mets with, you know, Syndergaard, Wheeler, those guys messing around in front of the press, kind of like little kids on, you know, in a candy shop because they were so happy to be together, so happy to be on a winning ball club. And now, you know, none of those guys, literally none of that staff is with the team now. And, you know, I know we're sitting here and, wow, it's 2024 now, so we're 9 years later, so that's to be expected. But I agree with you in the sense that, you know, when you like to play for a team, there's no better place to be. And this is kind of where I'm going with this question is, when you're in New York, if you are great, you are a god. But if you go to New York and you suck, you have to watch, it's not this dire, but metaphorically, you have to watch yourself walking around the city. What do you think is kind of going to, you know, obviously if Soto is a great, great year, he's the greatest thing since sliced bread, but if there's a situation in which he doesn't live up to the hype this year, could you see the Yankees fans being like, this guy sucks, get him the hell out of the Bronx?
Oh, 100%. I mean, that's the funny part about New York is that it's the best place ever, or it's the worst place you've ever been to. And that goes for the citizens as well. Like, if you live in New York or if you go to New York, you're just either going to love it or it's going to be just complete buns. It's the worst place you've ever been to. That's the way New York is. There's the highs are higher than they could ever go. There's no place, not with the Dodgers, not with the Giants, not with anybody, nobody, no place else. Not even in Queens. The Bronx, for whatever reason, and New York is still, it's like a slight notch below. Yankees fans take baseball just to a world that you almost feel like maybe it shouldn't go to that place. But when it goes good, it's sure sweet. But when it goes bad, it's like Joey Gallo, Sonny Gray. You're getting booed. People are chirping you around the city. You can't even go to like Del Frisco's and get a steak without people bothering you. It's bad. And that's why earlier I said Juan Soto's personality is perfect for New York, is because his personality is sure about who he is. Juan Soto knows exactly who he is. He doesn't have to worry about, if I go for 10 with 8 Ks against Boston and Fenway, and then I show back up to Yankee Stadium, those fans saw that game. It's not like any other fan base where they maybe were busy and they didn't see that game. No, they're watching like podcasts. Like people are watching like Talking Yanks and all these different shows, and they know what you did last weekend. Okay. They're like hawking your performance from last weekend. And then you get there, you need to know who you are. So when you show up to the plate, you can't be thinking about the 0 for 10. You need to be thinking about I'm Juan Soto still. So when you show up to the plate, that confidence is the reason why he's always going to pick himself up, and why I just have ultimate confidence, the fact that Juan Soto is just going to be fine in New York. Didn't matter where he played.
So slightly going off of that, though, obviously when you were growing up, your dad was a Yankee. He also played for the Mets a little bit. What was that experience like? Have you ever talked to him about what it was like playing in New York? And then also for you growing up, obviously when you were in school, all your friends like, wait, your dad's on the TV at night.
Yeah, I mean, to be quite honest with you, it was just total buns. It wasn't fun. A lot of people, I think, have an idea that, okay, your dad's Gary Sheffield, there must just be all positives. But there also is a huge drawback to that. It's you don't get as much time. Obviously, when you're playing professional baseball, people don't realize these people have real lives and these people have families. So it's like when somebody is on the road for 50% of the time, and then plus I wasn't raised with my dad. So like I'm visiting, I'm like half the time me and my dad spent together was at a hotel. So like people don't realize that, but we're just like on the road. You're out to dinner with, and most people will like go to a Chili's or go to an Applebee's with family and just spend there, and you'll spend your time sitting there talking. And meanwhile, there's like a line of 65 people waiting for an autograph at the table. And that's in a way taking away time that you have and just ways that you can go back and forth with your parents. So no, like there were a lot of bright spots when it came to being able to be around a lot of the professional guys, and especially guys I always idolize in baseball. Derek Jeter, Ichiro, always loved those guys. But there were a lot of drawbacks. So yeah, it was just interesting, and it was really dependent on the city. I really liked New York. I thought it was awesome. So it was dependent on the city of how much I took away from it. Towards the end, when I got older, it got better.
Yeah, we it's funny kind of that we're having you on, because we recently had the author of a book who was writing about all of these kind of father-son combinations and kind of their relationship and how baseball played a role in it. And it's interesting to see that a lot of them kind of shared your experience in that as well. Like I went to kindergarten with CeCe Sabathia's son Carson, and like, we were best friends, but like he came to school and there was a book signing and there were hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people waiting to get his autograph, which is cool, and it was a fundraiser for the school and whatever, but like at a certain point too, like that's my dad, you know. And so yeah. I definitely can see how that was rough. Thinking about kind of, you know, you're obviously big into social media, podcasting, we're big into podcasting. How do you think that social media plays a role kind of in families within baseball, but even just like players' mental health within baseball now, where, you know, maybe it was not as big of a factor as back when your dad was playing? You know, the Post was obviously way bigger, and, you know, everybody's picking up a copy of the Post in the city. But how do you think that social media's kind of shaped the life of a baseball player these days?
Well, athletes in general, it's just hard. It's really difficult. And I would say even podcasters have actually an understanding. If you're in the social world at all, which is what athletes are now, is they're not just performers. They're also social creatures, and which is weird, because a long time ago, like Michael Jordan, and Michael Jordan, I use him as an example all the time. It was the perfect storm. We had just enough coverage of him, but not too much. We never knew what anyone thought about him at all. It was so essentially it was just this unanimous celebratory experience for Michael Jordan. And long behold, when you fast forward 30 years later, people really only have positive things to say about Michael Jordan. But then you fast forward to today, and even like podcasters or maybe even an Aaron Judge, you literally could just hop on Twitter and suddenly there's a bridge between just some person who's in the bleachers in right field at Yankee Stadium and yourself. And now suddenly you know what they think. And so it, in a way, notches everybody a step down and makes you feel more accessible. It makes you more vulnerable. And you need to be very sure about who you are and what you're doing, because there's a lot of people who will like get into the podcasting space, make one episode, get a couple of reassuring things from a couple of fans, and then one person will be like, this show sucks, and then that show will never come out again. So that's the dynamic that we see today and how it's affected sports. It's affected our profession, right? And then pretty much anything else is that you also have to be your own PR crew. So I try to tell people you need to be very careful with how you go about your business on social media, because there's, in certain ways, social media has done me no favors at all. I get in trouble all the time, as you guys can see. But once people do slow down and get an opportunity to like talk to me and just have face-to-face interaction and conversation, I have never had a problem with anybody. So I just try to remind people that that's the way it is.
No, absolutely. And I think that's the best part about a podcast is that you can send a tweet, you get, what is it, 250 characters, and obviously it can be misinterpreted. It can be taken in one way. I know the prime example is that as we recently had the Hall of Fame voter, Bill Ballew, who got some credibility for being the first guy to not vote for Adrian Beltre. And when we published the initial episode, heavy, heavy criticism, to say the least. And everyone
yeah,
saw
that's
his
pretty bad.
Profile
it's
photo.
Not good.
Yeah, and everyone's saying he's 80, what's he doing? How's he voting? Mm-hmm. Why is this guy vote? And then sort of we had him on for 30 minutes and he gave his platform, and not saying that we agree with his logic, because it was a little interesting as to what he was saying about it. But it was interesting to hear him sort of give his rationale and give his reasoning and talk about it for 20 minutes, as opposed to just, here's the tweet, here's his name, here's the fact that he didn't vote for Beltre, let's all write negative comments about him. And just to hear him talk about, well, it was interesting when he was like, he's not as good as Ted Williams. Sure.
It probably humanized him at least a little bit. Because Twitter almost seems like a big F you, in a way, if you will. Somebody, I don't know, maybe I have the wrong takeaway here. But I'll hop on Twitter and I'll see, hey, here's, and people tag me all the time, hey, this guy didn't vote for Gary Sheffield. And they expect me to have this outlandish reaction to it. And I always tell people, my reaction is never going to be outlandish about anybody when it comes to voting in the Baseball Hall of Fame. As long as A, you know the rules, you know people's eligibility, you know what you're signing up for, okay? That, and you need to be at least somewhat respectful of the people who are on the ballot. If there's any type of like attitude, hey, I didn't vote for Derek Jeter, he was a terrible fielder, right? If they said that, now clearly you can see there's animosity and enjoyment in the fact that you're trying to stop somebody from getting to a certain point. Those are the only two things essentially that could happen where it would draw a response from me.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that you brought him on your podcast, most people won't do that. Most people would be more comfortable just tweeting about it, because it would technically be easier and better for you guys to get interaction, as far as just all you have to do is tweet, say, hey, look at this idiot. And then now suddenly like you guys get clicks, and that's kind of how social media is. So I applaud you guys for bringing him on.
No, so it was definitely fun to hear. I know probably didn't agree with, because he said at the end of the day, I'd have a 5-person Hall of Fame. And we're like, it's a really small hall, but at the end of the day, like, we heard where he was coming from and we got the rationale, and it was definitely a fun experience to see through that whole process. But another thing circulating on social media recently, and I know you're very in tune with the professional baseball league, is that the NCAA has says they don't like celebrating home runs. And if you bat flip, you get ejected. I assume you saw someone that hit their first collegiate home run this weekend here at Georgetown with me, celebrated his first career home run, kind of did a little bat flip, and then Jaden was ejected from the game immediately after. So just wanted to hear, since obviously I'm with Jaden every single day with the baseball team talking about stuff, have you seen the clip? Do you know what happened, and thoughts on the whole thing?
Oh, of course I saw the clip. I saw the clip. Yeah, Jaden posted it about 30 times on his Instagram in 25 different ways. No, but Jaden's a great kid. He's a great little brother. As big as he is, way bigger than me. But it's so ironic, because my dad is, me and Jaden are actually the two most difficult kids for my dad to raise, essentially, and just like kind of figure out, because my dad is so against bat flipping. It is hysterical. if you only you guys knew, which is hilarious and just ridiculous, by the way. the fact that he's against bat flipping. I mean, he's the most like screw you type of guy ever on the baseball field. And I'm like, Dad, if you played in 2024, you would be pimping balls left and right. And he's just not. I genuinely, and I don't ever call him a liar because I mean it's disrespectful. But in this one instance, it is so not true. My dad would be pimping balls like you guys never seen. So the fact that when I saw that, when he hit that bomb, first of all, I was so happy for him. Because I know it's a very difficult experience going from high school baseball, and people show up and it's the culture shock of, oh, I'm this Georgetown athlete. And so once you decompress from that and you see the reality of, oh, it's really difficult to get on the field at Georgetown. Oh, it's really hard to get a role, because people just see that you committed somewhere and they assume that it's all flowers, but it's actually a hard process. There's a ton of work that goes into it. And I've told him that. And so to see him being able to get on the field and then have some success is just amazing. So yeah, I was really happy to see, and they said he was ejected, right?
Mm-hmm. So the rule is he got ejected from the game, and the Big East rule is that you then get suspended the next day too. So we had, Jaden was chilling in the, I think it was the batting cages and street clothes, and just watching the game from the sideline.
He was probably having the time of his life. I don't think he probably cared he was ejected, because realistically, no one's going to care. You, I mean, of course you want to play, and if you're playing really well, and for him, like, it's, he's getting on the field and he's finally having some success there. I'm sure he wanted to play, but at the same time, when you're sitting over there and you're just not playing, everyone knows why you're over there. It like kind of reminds everybody, yeah, I hit a bomb. So
no, absolutely. It's almost like if you knew you were going to get ejected, that bat's going flying into the dugout. Cause it wasn't even, the weird thing is the ump's looking the other way and he almost just like tosses it. And they're like, you know what? Screw it. Scores.
I'm sure they're
two.
Just doing their job. Like I'm sure it's just a stupid rule. Mm-hmm. It's just a dumb rule. The rule didn't need to happen. And I felt like the last maybe 3 or 4 years, especially with social media, we were starting to really get more into college baseball. College baseball was actually becoming cool. Yeah. And I remember growing up, I used to go watch like a lot of dudes at Arizona State, because I'm here in Arizona. I used to go watch them all the time. Well, for those few years, they went to BB Core Bats. College baseball kind of had a dead spot there for like the next 6 to 7 years. We finally got hot again. And then now bat flipping is gone. What I would imagine is they should allow bat flipping, but maybe you can probably control how they go around the bases. Like, you're not going to be able to take 40 seconds to get around the bases. At least be somewhat presentable around the bag. It's kind of like the idea of golf, where they're saying you should be able to wear whatever clothes you want, right? It's, yeah, depending on where you're playing. So like but you also need to be within moderation. You can't show up in Crocs to come play golf, right? So that's my thing. Find a happy middle ground, and getting rid of bat flipping is just not it.
No, I love it. Absolutely. Well, we've got two rapid fire questions to throw at you here to wrap things up, if you're game for them.
Oh, absolutely. Let's roll.
So the first one is predictions for the 2024 Yankees wins. And then if they're making a postseason run, how's it going?
Okay. So my prediction before, so let's just say before Gerrit Cole's injury,
yeah,
my prediction was that they would win 93 games, which I thought was pretty solid. Like, I would have been pretty happy with that. Offense should be much improved, but obviously you saw DJ LeMahieu, who's supposed to be a leadoff hitter. So now I think Volpe or Gleyber Torres will be leadoff. I'm going to say with that injury, they're going to be piecing together starts for the first 2 months, 3 months.
At least,
I'm going to say 88 wins. They're going to grind, and 88 wins, hopefully that's going to be enough to squeak in a wild card. And then with Gerrit Cole, and maybe in addition at the deadline, they'll be, you know, somewhat of a contender. But I can't say for sure what we're going to do in the postseason. But as far as wins, I'll go 88.
I love it. Absolutely. And then our last question, we've, now that the podcast has transitioned more to an entirely interview based section, we love to give our guests the opportunity to shout out someone else in the baseball world that they think might be a cool next person to have on, or has a cool baseball story that might be worthwhile to come onto the podcast.
Oh, absolutely. Jake Ellenbogen. So he's my co-host of my show. He's on vacation right now with his dad, and he's just the best dude ever. He's the reason why I decided to start this podcast. He knows Yankees baseball left and right. I mean, me and him talk about it all the time. So he would be a perfect person for you to bring on, and yeah, give him a shout out for me.
I love it. Absolutely. Well, we always have a blast getting to catch up with you. So I'm sure anyone that you recommend is going to be an absolute blast to talk to them. But if you want to also shout out Twitter, Instagram, where else can the guys come and follow you at?
Yeah, Gary Sheffield Jr. on all platforms. And if for anyone who's interested in a Yankees podcast, that podcast I told you about with Jake, we're doing it. It's called Yankees Unloaded on YouTube. So if you go stop by there, we are an up and coming podcast. And of course, we're not afraid and never have been to say what we feel is necessary, whether it be like there's going to be some difficult topics, whether it be Trevor Bauer, whether it be Blake Snell doesn't go where you wanted him to, or Rodon's learning a cutter, which he shouldn't be throwing at all. We're going to talk about it on the podcast, and we're going to be bringing on some great guests, and you guys are going to have a great time. So thank you.
Absolutely. I love it. Well, thanks again so much for joining us. Looking forward to having you back on again real soon in the future. But for Dylan, Matt, and Gary, until the next time, the side is retired.